Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Masechta Nida is daf Samech Vav. Okay, it's hard to get a job when you're older, right? Why do I bring that up right now? We're learning the 10th parak of Masechta Nida, Parak Tinokus, final parak of Masechta Nida, final parak of Shas, at least in terms of Gemara, because the Gemara just is going to mention this by way of aside. We quoted yesterday Rabbi Chinna bar Shamaya regarding a particular incident. So the Gemara here quotes them again. So just we're on Samech Amud Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and the Gemara says Rabbi Amar of Chinna bar Shamaya Mishmei Derav Kevin Shinitku Shinav Shal Adam Nismatu Mizonosav. He says it a little bit rougher than the way I said it. When a person's teeth fall out, so Nismatu Mizonosav, his food diminishes. Rashi says this is talking about him earning a livelihood. It's harder to earn a livelihood as he gets older. Shenamar gam anin asati lechem nikayon shinayim b'chol arechem v'chusa lechem b'chol mekom oseichem. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Amos, which speaks to this idea where as you get older, it's just simply harder to obtain bread. Okay, and that comes by way of aside, and the Gemara now resumes its discussion of our Mishnah. Okay, so let's get a global overview of what we've been talking about for the past couple of days. Actually, we started the 10th parak yesterday, so we haven't been that long into the 10th parak of the Masechta, and we're talking really about Dam Besulim. As already mentioned yesterday, Dam Besulim is not Dam Nida. It's not the same. It comes from the rupturing of the hymenal sac, which is accomplished usually by the initial act of relations between husband and wife. And with that rupturing of the hymenal sac, so that's Dam Besulim. It's not Dam Nida. The woman does not become a Nida. She's not Tamea. She's not Asa to her husband. Okay? In other words, it's no more than just simple. So I was going to say it's like an account or like an abrasion, which we'll talk more about today. But it's more than that, though. It's a pocket of pooled blood that is aggregated at the front of the canal, and it's ruptured. So fine. So that's the story. But the complexity of the story is really based on the following: how long can we say that the blood that's coming out of her is dam besulim as opposed to dam nida? Meaning, blood is blood, and it's hard to know. Where exactly the blood is coming from. So how long does she have? So our Mishnah really spoke about a girl at three different developmental stages. So the first stage of the Mishnah we talked about is Tinoke Shaloi Gezman Leraus. It's talking about a girl who is not yet of the age where she sees, meaning she's a Katana. And as we mentioned yesterday in the Gemara, Rav introduced a Chiddush, even if she actually started menstruating. Doesn't matter when the girl is a katana. So Beit Shammai says that she has 4 nights. And Beis Hillel says, no, Achitech Yamaka, until the wound heals. And we remember the Gemara yesterday, where the Gemara gave us a diagnosis of how we know whether or not the wound has healed or not. Okay. That's number one. Number two is a girl who's Higiyaz Manaleros Velo Rasa, where she has arrived at the age where she is expecting to menstruate, but she hasn't actually menstruated as of yet. So in other words, she entered into her stage of Narus. She's a bas mitzvah. She entered the stage of Narus. But she hasn't yet seen. So what's the story at that point in time? So Beis Hillel says that she's given 4 nights until Motzei Shabbos. As I mentioned yesterday, Minag Kadmon, the early Minag, is that women would get married on a Wednesday night. So that means that they would have Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Motzei Shabbos. So that would be 4 consecutive nights where the assumption could be that that's Dam Besulim, that's not Dam Nida. Okay. And then finally, the last stage we talked about is a woman, Higiyaz Man Leros, again, same girl, Bas Mitzvah. She entered into her stage of Narus and Rasa, and she actually started menstruating. So here, 1 night, says Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, Kol Halayla Kula. The entire first night she's given to her husband, to which she can ascribe and ascertain that the blood that's coming out of her is Dam Besulim. After that point in time, she no longer can make any assumption that the dam that's coming out of her is dam besulim, but rather dam nida. Okay. That is what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. Let's go on. Tanu Rabbanan, we are on Samech Amud Aleph, and we are about 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting a new section of Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Ra'asa va'oda beveis avia, beiso omrim kol laila shala nosin la, kol halayla shala, Venosin la ona shlema. Okay, so the Brisa talks about now Rasa v'oda beve savia, where, again, she's a Nara. She started menstruating while in her father's house. So Beis Hillel is going to give her the first night. And he says, ona shlema. Now, ona shlema, it's a funny term, meaning usually when we want to talk about a night, we'll just simply say ona. Ona shlema, what is meant by that? V'kama ona shlema, pirush Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, laila v'chatzi yom, day and a half. Okay, day and a half. So at this point, the Gemara is now assuming that what the Braisa means is 18 hours. The whole night, 12 hours, plus half of the next day, another 6 hours. So a total of 18 hours. That's difficult just in general to understand, meaning we normally talk about units of time of either a night or either a day. We don't really, in general, talk in terms of day and a half as an ona, even if the term that's used is being ona shlema. Okay. So the Gemara is going to take a little bit of time in order to get to its point, but essentially the point is that's not really what the Braisa meant. But let's go through the Gemara step by step. Umi bein kulai verminu, the Gemara quotes a Gemara from Avodah Zarah. It's a Braisa from Avodah Zarah. And the Braisa is talking about koshering your wine press and your olive press. Okay, issues that, of course, all of us deal with in our own home. How to properly kosher your wine press and your olive press. Now keep this in mind, your wine press and your olive press, so they don't need the kind of koshering that our kelim need. Our kelim, what happens is that if there is cooked meat and milk in our kelim, or if there is non-kosher cooked in our kelim, so the way to kosher is hagalah, what we would call koshering. Over here we're talking about a wine press, we're talking about an olive press, so everything is cold. So what kind of koshering do we need? So the Braisa here talks about where? Your olive press, your wine press, right? The gitav is a wine press. The base badav is the olive press. So they become tamei, and you want to now make it betahara ketzerosa. So what do you do? What do you do in order to expunge and remove that which is prohibited? So ketzerosa hadap of Allah mahadashim. So the really big equipment, the boards, twigs, lulavim, I'm not really sure what they're used in the process. Rashi says that they're used to clean the wine press. Okay, whatever the case is. And the adashim and the actual press itself. So madichin. So what do you do with them? You just simply rinse them off. Ha'akalim, shel nitzarim, I have over here wicker work. Okay, whatever that may be. Michelle and Sarm, it's made up of willow, Michelle Bitzputz, or it's made up of hemp. Minagvam, you simply dry it off and that would be sufficient. In other words, they don't absorb anything, so just a simple drying off would be enough. Michelle Shifa, Michelle Gemi, if it were to be made up of these other types of materials, Gemi is kind of like a rubber, like a sap. Miyashnan, so you have to let it dry. Vikama Miyashnan, and how much do you let it dry? Yud Beis Chodesh, so 12 months. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer Menichim, Igat Lagat, Umi Bad Labad. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says you have to leave it over for a full season, meaning don't use it again until next season. And the Gemara takes a moment to just simply comment. Rav Shimon Gamliel seems to be saying the exact same thing as the Tanakama, meaning wait till next season, which is basically 12 months. So, Hainu Tanakama, Ikabenayu, Harfei, V'afle. The Gemara says, no, there's a difference, there's a practical difference. What if we're talking about where next season comes in early? Or let's say this season comes in late. So in other words, according to Shimon Gamliel, you don't have to actually mark off 12 months on the calendar. You could just simply go from one harvest to the next harvest, even though it may be more or less than 12 months. Let's say you want to use the wine press immediately. Let's say you want to use the olive press immediately. You don't want to wait the full year to be miyashin. So what do? So now you could do hagala. You could kasher using hagala. Boil in hot water or olive juice, boil it in olive juice or what we would call olive oil. In other words, that which is extracted from the olive. Put it under the pipe where the waters are boiling, or put in a stream where the pressure of water is very strong. The common, how long you have to leave it in the running water? Ona. So you have to leave it in for one full ona. So you see where we're going. Now, finally, we see where we're going. Meaning, all this from Avodah Zarah is interesting, but not really related to us. We're talking about a woman having relations as a basula, and now we're talking about the wine press and the olive press. We're only bringing it up right now because one of the koshering techniques mentioned over here is to put the wine press or the olive press under rushing water, under very strong currents, and leave it in there for an ona, for one full ona. Vikama ona. And now the Gemara wants to know what kind of time period are we talking about? So just like we said regarding Yai Nesach, so too we said by Bitaros. Gemara just takes a moment to tweak that last point. The Gemara says the Braisa really doesn't make any sense, meaning the main point of the Braisa is Taharos, and then the next part would be moving it to Yai Nesach, Kach Amru B'Yayin Nesach. Okay. So, fine, it's a little tweaking over there, but Vikama Ona. The real reason why all this is coming up right now is because here in this Braisa, as one of the koshering techniques for how to clean up your wine press and how to clean up your olive press, is to leave it under a rushing current for one full Ona. What is that? How long is that? I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. O Yom, O Laila. It's either a day or it's a night. A classic definition of what an ona is. Rabbi Chana She'ina V'Amrila, Rabbi Chana Bar She'una Amar, Rabbi Baruch Chana Rav Yochanan, Chati Yom V'Chati Laila. Half a day and half a night. V'Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak V'lo Pligi. Now there's no debate over here, meaning really we're all saying the same thing. Either a day, either a night. Half a day, half a night. Habitzkufas Nisan V'Tishrei, Habitzkufas Tammuz V'Teves. Meaning that really, when we say ona, we really mean 12 hours. That's really the critical issue of defining what an ona is. An ona is 12 hours. But, as we know, we live slightly north of the equator. And just a couple weeks ago, I was really south of the equator. But you know that during seasons, days are shorter, nights are longer, or vice versa, depending on which season you're in. So in other words, you want to get to 12 hours. So how are you going to do that if you're in the middle of the winter? Or if you're in the middle of the summer, where in the middle of the summer, your days are really long and your nights are really short. So how do you get to 12 hours? So you average out. How do you average out? It's very simple. Take half a day and take half a night, and you're going to average out, and you're going to get to 12 hours. So if you're in the middle of fall, or if you're in the middle of spring, right? Or I should say rather, if you're in the beginning of fall, in the beginning of spring, like really at the equinox, so then you're fine, meaning a night is going to be 12 hours, a day is going to be 12 hours, right? Just about. But if you're in the middle of the winter or if you're in the middle of the summer and you want to get to 12 hours, so take half a day and take half a night and you're going to average out and you're going to get to 12 hours. Okay, good. Wonderful. So, now everyone understand all this is really leading to one simple question. We now know what an ona is. An ona is 12 hours. Great. So now we go back to our basula and we talk about the basula who has arrived at the age now where she's a Nara. She started menstruating, and so she's afforded one Ona with her husband, where she can say that that blood that's coming out is Dam Basulim and not Dam Nida. How much is an Ona? So the Gemara quoted the Braisa. The Braisa quoted the name of Shimon Gamliel, a night and half a day, 18 hours. So how come in Avodah Zarah, where we talked about Ona, we were very clear about a definition, which is 12 hours. And here we're saying it's 18 hours. It's such a simple question, and the Gemara attempts to answer. So, Habitzkufas Nivin to Habitzkufas Tamas Vatevas. Hachanami, Ema Gabi Nida, Chati Yom Vachati Laila. So, Vaha Laila Vachati Yom Kamar. So the Gemara says, Hachanami, Ema Gabi Nida, Chati Yom Vachati Laila. So the Gemara's answer is same over here. Meaning, when we're talking about an ona, we mean half a day and half a night. Wonderful. V'halayla v'chatz yom kamar? Doesn't really fit in the words of the Tosefta. Go back and read the Tosefta again, and the Tosefta says a night and half a day. So the Gemara says, Ela I layla denisan v'tishrei, I chatzi yom v'chatzi layla detevis v'tamos. So the Gemara says, okay, we're gonna tweak the Braisa a little bit, but basically it's going to come out to being the same thing. If we're talking about Nisan, right, the beginning of spring, or if we're talking about Tishrei, the beginning of fall, right, Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. So then we're right around the equinoxes at those times, so therefore we're talking just simply a night, which will be 12 hours. If we're in the winter, if we're in the summer, right, that's when we're in right now, just a few short days after the end of Tammuz, so now it's going to be half a day and half a night, meaning because the days now are longer and the nights now are shorter and you want to get to 12 hours, so you average out. How do you average out? Take half the day and take half the night. Okay, that's answer number one. Answer number one basically is, that's exactly what the Braisa meant. The Braisa meant 12 hours. The Gemara says, or what you could say is as follows. This alternative answer of the Gemara really is not going to be any type of real deviation. Meaning, we're really also going to be saying that it's talking about 12 hours. But it's just a question of when we start from. Meaning, the 12 hours that's afforded to the Basula starts from the first time that she has relations with her husband, which the Gemara here says it's going to be right around midnight. Midnight? Why midnight? So the Gemara over here says very succinctly, but I'll just elaborate a little bit. The Gemara Ksuvah, the first mission Ksuvah says that a woman gets married on Wednesday night. Right. So Wednesday night. Now, how late is the chasna? So it's kind of funny, but the Gemara says it can go actually pretty late. Because you have to remember that back in the good old days, they actually wrote the Ksuvah at the chasna. Nowadays, we go to the local Judaica store. We buy a copy. There are a couple of fill-in-the-blanks. Okay, so you just fill in the blanks and that's it. In the good old days, the marriage contract was written right there and then. And the Gemara also points out, there's going to be fighting. It's not my comment. It's the Gemara says, as natural human behavior is, and you have two parties now getting together and trying to figure out finances. Okay, so there's gonna be fighting. And traditionally, meaning the old joke goes, what's the minhag? The minhag is to fight. So what's the minhag? The minhag back then was to fight. So really everything didn't get resolved and the chasna didn't end until midnight. Okay, meaning it was long. It started somewhere Wednesday in the evening, but by the time everything got said and done, you're talking about midnight. So the newlywed really are not private until sometime around midnight. So all the Braisa means when the Braisa says and you have half of the next day is just a simple acknowledgement that really the Bia Rishona won't be taking place sometimes till midnight. And so therefore, it's 12 hours. It's really that simple. It's 12 hours. It's just going to be 12 hours from midnight, which will finish up on noon of the next day. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Rav Shmuel Dami Tavaya Halacha Bo Be'ilas Mitzvah Parish. Now, Rav and Shmuel will say, you see everything we learned in the Mishnah? Okay, now you can ignore it. Okay. And I don't want to be flippant, and I'm not trying to be cute about this, but what I'm saying is correct. Meaning Rav and Shmuel are basically going to tell us, this is not our minhag. Our minhag is not to... Now, first of all, when I say this is not our minhag, please understand that our Mishnah is talking about a girl getting married, either as a katana or as a Nara, and even when the Mishnah is talking about a Nara, as we learned yesterday, a Nara is from 12 to 12 and a half years of age. So, really, the truth of the matter is that for us, the whole Mishnah is academic anyway, being that we don't marry at these ages anymore. Okay. Although a couple generations ago, not that long ago, back in Europe, I mean, in Iran, what was your marriage ages in Iran? Young, right? I understand. Iran is modernized, but 14 years of age? Okay. It really has not been that long ago. But for us nowadays, we get married late, 19, 20. I get married as an old man. I get married as 24. So, in other words, the... Fine. So for us anyway, the Mishnah really is academic, being that our social mores is that we marry at a later age. But even Rav and Shmuel are going to tell us that even after having learned our Mishnah, and even if a girl gets married at this age, our halacha is boa be'ilas mitzvah uporesh, that you have the first act of relations and then separate. Now, first of all, there are two points over here which really are Chidushim. Point number one is that in our Mishnah we were talking about Achitichi Hamaka, until the wound heals, which could be really an extended period of time, four nights. or even where she's a Nara and she starts menstruating, but she's given the full first night. Meaning, and as we just learned in the Gemara, she's given a full 12 hours. So first of all, what Rav and Shmuel are saying is just one act of Bia and that's it.
Regardless of what stage
she's at. But moreover, however, what they're also saying, you got to read that carefully, uparish, and they need to separate. Meaning, what does that mean, separation? Meaning separate because at this point in time now, the assumption is that she bled, and we don't know what blood came out of her. Now, when I say we don't know, meaning, yes, it's probably Dam Besulim, but still, not 100% sure what it is. And so therefore, Prisha means separation, means treat it like a Nida. Treat it like Dam Nida. Now, I say that, well, you'll see. You'll see as we go through the Gemara that that seems to be the correct understanding of Rav and Shmuel. So the Gemara quotes from the Gemara that we learned yesterday. Remember, Rebbe gave the husband and wife 4 nights. Now it happens to be that the 4 nights were staggered over the course of 1 year, but so what? Meaning it was 4 nights. And you're talking about one act of intimacy between husband and wife? So Amale Rabba, Hadur Ifricha, Lamale Esav Mimas Nisan. The expression over here, Adure Ifricha, not familiar with the expression. Anyway, but the point is, why are you asking me from the Braisa? Meaning, you as much as you can question me, which is legitimate, why don't you question me from the Mishnah? Meaning, the halacha of Rav and Shmuel is not just ignoring a Braisa telling a story about Rebbe, but the whole Mishnah really is going against Rav and Shmuel. So the whosoever Maisa Rav, so he was thinking, I think the Brisa is a better source of asking a question because the Brisa actually tells us Maisa Rav, meaning Rebbe actually paskin like the Mishnah. Meaning if it's a Mishnah, so it could be that it's a Mishnah, but it's not followed anymore. Once you see Rebbe's actually putting it into practice, so then yeah, of course I'm going to ask from Rebbe Maisa Rav. So Mikama Kom the Rav Shmuel Kasha, Inadav de Karabasenu. So the Gemara says that Rav and Shmuel are following a different track. They're following a different path. Detanya Rabasenu Khazvanimnu Bal Bilas Mitzvah Paresh. That there was a recount, a revote, Nimnu Vigamru, right? Are we gonna include that extra word over there? No. Okay, boa bilas mitzvah uparish, that you just have one act of intimacy between husband and wife, and then there's separation. Okay, it's interesting because if right, we remember, Rebbe was a Rebbe to Rebbe Chia, and Rebbe Chia was a student to Rav. And in fact, I think Rav also learned a little bit by Rebbe himself. I'm not sure about that point, but you're really talking about right one generation between Rebbe and Rav, and already now the minhag has changed right drastically. Meaning, by Rebbe, the minhag was to follow our Mishnah, that she's given, depending on what developmental stage she's at, either until the wound heals, or 4 nights, or the first full night. And now, just one generation later, by Rav and Shmuel, already the halacha was, no. First act of Bia, and that's it. Amarlu Ula, Ki'ava Bei, Ba Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish B'Tinokes. Ula testifies that he was learning in the yeshiva of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, and they were learning Tinokas, which is the 10th parak of Masechta Nida, the one we happen to be learning right now, just a short 1,500 years later, a little bit more. And lo hava maska mina ela kedamasik tala mi bei karva. And what was I able to walk away with after learning the parak of Tinokas in their yeshiva? I walked away with basically the same thing that a fox walks away with after he walks through a plow field. Rashi explains the analogy that basically a little dirt on the feet. But that's about it. Meaning, I didn't walk away with anything else. Now, do you understand this? Yeah, we kind of understand this. Meaning, we go through a Mishnah. The Mishnah gives us a very clear line of, here's the girl, here's what developmental age she's at, and here's how many nights she has with her husband, all right, and we can attribute the Dam to be Dam Besulim. And finally, after all said and done, now what's the halacha? Bilas mitzvah parish. One act of bia, and that's it. What about the Mishnah? So that's exactly what Ula is saying. Meaning, after having gone through the Mishnah and having learned all the Mishnayos of the 10th parak of Nida, but you don't really, there's not much in terms of halacha lamaisa, right? Very little. Right? After learning the 10th perek, here's now what I know. The first act of Bia, and that's it. So Amalei, Rabbi Abba, Rav Ashi, Elamiata, Bal Nefesh, Lo Yigmar, Bi'ilas Mitzvah, I'm sorry, Lo Yigmar, Bi'aso. So now, the Gemara quotes Rabbi Abba, who says to Rav Ashi, so if this is accurate and this is correct, meaning, let's see if we got this straight. The first act of intimacy now becomes the final act of intimacy between husband and wife, in which then they're going to separate. She'll treat it like Damnida, and then she'll wait 7 days, right? And then she'll tovel the mikvah. Okay. And as we'll learn later on this morning, our minag is even more machmir. But that just stay tuned for later on. Good. Now, but what's the consideration? The consideration is that the dam that's coming out of her is not dam besulim, but rather it's dam nida. Fine. Now, when is the dam besulim going to be ruptured? At the beginning of the act of Biha, being that the dam besulim is found at the entrance of the woman, so really it's going to be ruptured at an early stage. So now let's say you're a Baal Nefesh. A Baal Nefesh is the term the Gemara uses for somebody who is not just religious, but really religious. Okay? Now for such an individual, if the concern is that the moment she starts bleeding, that's not dam besulim, that's dam nida, so if that's true, so then really, he shouldn't even complete the act of Bia. Meaning the moment that he's ruptured and the moment that there's now dam, so that should be now a cessation of relations between husband and wife.
He has to consummate the marriage.
Well, I mean, to a certain degree, he did. To a certain degree. And again, if this is a concern, if the concern is that it's dam nida, so then he should separate immediately. Lo yigmar biaso. We've seen this already back in the Masechta earlier. And he says, I'll say to the Baal Nefesh, don't do that. Because if you try to do that, meaning I understand your motivation, it's sincere, it's good. But if you try to do that, libo nokfo uparish, then it's going to bring about a certain amount of anxiety, and you may not even have relations altogether. So I will say then that to the Baal Nefesh, and to the rest of us, who may not be Baalei Nefesh, but to the rest of us, that it's not recommended behavior. Recommended behavior is to finish the first act of intimacy between husband and wife, and then to treat it like dam nida. Okay. Tan Rabban Vikulan Shah Yoshofas Dam Uvas mitoch da leilos achar da leilos mitoch alayla achar alayla kulan tzrichos livdok etzatzman. Okay. Now, I know we've touched on this before, but here comes again the discussion of, let's say she's bleeding from a time where it's mutter to a time where it's prohibited. Now, do you remember where we had this discussion early in Masechta? We had this discussion regarding a woman who gave birth to a child, where she's also afforded what we call dam tahor, right? Pure blood. Blood that does not make her tamea. And we talked about what if she continues to bleed from day 80 to day 81, or from day 40 to day 41, right? Remember we had that discussion earlier? So that was subject to a debate whether or not she could treat that blood as dam tahor or dam nida. It depends on whether it's mayan, it's mayan echad or shtei mayanos. Okay, that goes back then. Basically, it's the same type of discussion. Let's say that there's a girl where she had 4 nights, right? Again, we're going back to our Mishnah. We're setting ourselves back in the framework of our Mishnah, where she had 4 nights. And that means that she got married as a nara, but she hasn't started menstruating. And now she's continuing to bleed continuously from her 4th night and on. So can we now say, yeah, that's dam besulim, that's not dam nida? So the braisa says, if you do a bedika, then the answer is going to be yes. Listen carefully. The braisa says, the tzrichos livdok esatzman uvekulin rameir machmi kidivir beishamai ushar, or as the goan puts in, v'chein shar ri'io shemein beishamai beisilo, Halachacha maradam shayari mimer omer maradam mishunim hein ze mize. The blood of besulim versus the blood of nida are different than one another, visually different than one another, and if you do an examination, you can actually see the difference. And so, therefore, Rav Meir is of the opinion that if you did an examination and you saw that it was dam besulim, so they can continue to have relations even afterwards. Ketzad dam nida adom dam besulim eino adom. Now, dam nida is red and dam basulim is not red. Now, it's interesting. The Gemara doesn't give us what color it is, but it's not red. Dam nida zehom, dam basulim ain't no zehom. Dam nida is zehom. Zehom is like dirty. It's opaque. And dam basulim is not. Dam nida baminam. According to dam basulim, baminam stardam. Dam nida comes from the uterus, and dam basulim comes from the side. I'm Rav Yosef Bar Rav Yosef. I'm Rav Yochanan. Zu divrei Rabbi Meir. Vachacham amomrim kol marin damim achasein. The entire brisa that we just learned is authored by Rabbi Meir, is only the opinion of Rabbi Meir, but the Chachamim are of the opinion that all bloods look the same. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, no bedika can then ascertain whether it's dam nida or dam basulim. It seems to be, you know how I enjoy avoiding this, but sometimes you get back, you get painted into a corner. It seems to be that they're having a machlokus over metzius, over what the reality is. We don't normally like to suggest that. We normally like to say that there's some sort of analytical discussion going on in the Gemara, but it seems to be that there is a metzius discussion, a debate, in terms of whether dam basulim looks like dam nida.
But there's a more fundamental issue with the Svara, and that is the whole point of the context of a girl trying to prove she was a betulah when they got married. You know, the fortnight that the father is supposed to bring the blood to prove. Then if the husband challenges,
right,
the father is supposed to defend by showing proof.
Right.
So if they're saying that they cannot differentiate between right and the betulah, how are they going to
look? In other words, you ask anyone in the Gemara, right? That dam that comes out from the first act. What is it? So they're all going to say it's dam basulim.
But you're saying they cannot differentiate.
Well, certainly that's correct. The Gemara did say that. But in other words, the understanding is that if she's a basula, it's going to rupture, and that dam that's presented over there is dam basulim. In other words, that's an assumption. That's a default assumption. The only thing the Gemara now is taking into consideration is there also dam nida there as well? Could be. It's possible. And what Rav and Shmuel are basically saying is, it's such a possibility that after the first act of intimacy, that's it. No more. But only because there may be also, in addition to the Dam Basulim, there may also be Dam Nida as well. Tanu Rabbanan Naro Dam Achmas Tashmish. Okay. Now we're about to start a new Braisa, and this one's sad. We talked earlier in the Masechta about sometimes a very sad conclusion between husband and wife, regarding the woman who simply couldn't fix her schedule, right? And that took us back to a very interesting discussion. Here as well, we're going to deal with another story, which is not a happy story. It's a sad story. Harod Damachmas Tashmish. So let's say the woman, every time she's having relations with her husband, she sees blood. Meaning, we're not talking, as Rashi points out right now, we're not talking about the basula anymore. This is not an issue of virginity and dam basulim. This is just simply the woman is seeing blood after every act of relations. So, haro dam achmas tashmish mishameshes pam rishona ushniya ushlishes. So she'll have relations with her husband one time, two times, and three times. Now, I'm going to state the obvious. Not consecutively, meaning because after the first time, she's a nida. She discharged blood. So in other words, after separation, whatever that separation is, if we're following the Gemara's, you know, the din d'oraisa, so that means separation of a week. If we're following the Chumra, so it's a separation of, could be 12, 13 days, whatever the case is. In other words, first act of relations, separate. Come back, second act of relations, she's bleeding, separate. Third act of relations, she's bleeding. So now we have a problem. Because now three times in a row, husband and wife are having relations, and she's bleeding on account of the act of relations. So we have what's called now classically a chazaka. Okay? And the chazaka now is telling us that she's going to bleed again next time they have relations. So obviously this is no good. So she needs to get a divorce, and she's going to have to marry another guy. We all understand the Gemara is going to make this point very clear. Not all men are the same, and it could be that she'll respond differently to another guy, and she may not bleed with another guy. Okay, what is this? I know that's a funny question. I'm not saying it well either. Meaning, what's going on? Right? I'm not trying to give a medical explanation over here because that's not my job. Okay. but just from a halachic explanation, meaning what are we viewing this as, right? And the simple answer is, it's a vesas haguf. Right? Do you remember a couple days ago we introduced ourselves to the idea of a vesas haguf, meaning that a woman sees blood every time she sneezes. She sees blood every time she yawns. She sees blood every time she experiences cramps. And we said, what's the vesas haguf telling us? It's telling us is that this is the precipitant to her onset of her nida.
Does it
matter? Oh, good. So this particular woman now, right, in other words, every time she's having relations with her husband, this is turning now into a vesas haguf. And just like vesos are real, meaning, so in other words, every time back in the Mishnah, if she sneezed, and for three times she sneezed, and with every sneeze she starts to have an onset of nida, so now for this woman, we're going to say the same thing. Meaning it's now been proven, she's muchzak, that every time she's having relations with her husband, it's gone out three consecutive times, she is bleeding. So one way to view this is that this is a vest is a guf. Now Ben makes a very good point, and this is not exactly the same, because previously we were talking about internal stimuli, meaning she sneezes. In other words, it's not something which was forced upon her. This is not external, this is an internal. Right? Or she has cramps. That's internal. Here, it's an external cause. It's the husband causing it. So I guess you could quibble a little bit in terms of whether this is a classic vesas haguf. But anyway, but I'm just giving some sort of framework in terms of how to understand this. Okay. So now she's up to her second husband. Okay. So while Acher, I'm sorry, Nisa's
Acher. Did you look from her husband?
It's a good question. I assume so. Meaning it's not... In other words, as opposed to an islandess where she knew the information prior to being married, she didn't disclose that information, that's a mekach taos. Here, she had no idea. Okay. Nisis lacher. So now she's up to her second husband. Now, v'ras adam achmas tashmish, mishamesh es par mishona, v'shneo v'shlish es mikam v'elach lo tishamish, ashtetzgarish. And unfortunately, with her second husband now, same results. It yielded the same results, where now she bled three consecutive times during Tashmish, and so now she also needs to get a divorce from the second husband as well. Vitinasi l'achra, now she's going to marry a third husband. Okay? So now she's given a third chance. Niseis l'achra, v'rasa damach mas Tashmish, mishameshes pamishona, ushniya, ushlishit, mikan ve'elech, lo tishamish. So now, third husband, third result. Okay? And terrible baseball analogy, but you saw it coming, right? So that's now, right, three strikes with the first batter, three strikes with the second batter, and three strikes with the third batter. So now the inning is over. Okay. Now, as terrible a sports analogy goes, so now, is there a chance for us to help this woman? Meaning, because now at this point in time, not only does she have a chazaka with every man, but she has a chazaka now with all men. Meaning, because what we have is now a representative sample of all men. Now, with three separate men, and granted that not all men are created equal, but with three separate men, now she's bleeding with every act of tashmish. So now we could say simply that this woman is now going to bleed with an act of tashmish, and it doesn't matter who the man is going to be. It's just a simple act of tashmish. So now,
we know this is not normal.
It's clearly not normal. That's not the issue. The issue is, where is this blood coming from? Meaning, is this blood now uterus blood, or is this blood now blood that's coming from a wound along her canal? And that makes all the difference in the world. If it's uterus blood, that's damnida. And the woman, unfortunately, is going to be in a very unfortunate position. If this is just simply dominant stadim, so it's just coming from the side, it's just coming from the wall of the canal. That's
what did you do with that first?
I anticipated that question. Wait, please. I will address it. Okay. So now what she's going to do is she's going to do a medical examination. And for those of you who are who know about a little bit about medicine, you're going to be impressed. Meaning the Gemara over here is going to describe a medical examination that's going to be done to this woman in order to ascertain in terms of where the blood is coming from. So the Braisa over here is going to give a very graphic, detailed explanation of how this examination is done. So what happens is that you bring a tube and you put a pipe into the tube. Umoch munach arosha, put a piece of cotton swab at the end of the pipe, and what you do is you insert the tube into her body, and so now what you're basically doing is you're shielding the canal from the cotton swab. You insert the cotton swab basically up to the cervix, and you see now and then you pull the cotton swab out. And if the cotton swab is red, so now you know that this blood is coming from the uterus. If the cotton swab is clean, so now you know that the blood is not coming from the cervix, but it's coming from the side. There must be some sort of cut along the wall of the canal. And this is the medical examination that's done to this woman. Now, if she has a wound, so then she could say that the blood's coming from the wound. Vest. Now, if she has a vest, which means that she has a certain pattern, so tola bevesta. Now, what if the dam maka is different than the dam of the ri'iya? So that you cannot be tola. Now, what if she has blood in her uterus? I'm sorry. What if she has a wound in her uterus? Meaning this is not usual uterine blood, but there was some sort of ulcer in her uterus, some sort of whatever. The blood was coming from another source that happened to have gone through her uterus. So Rebbe says that would be fine. Now, how do they know this information? I'm not really particularly sure. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Damaka Habam in the Makor Tame, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says no. Any blood that goes through the uterus is going to be Dam Tame. Rabbi Seinu Heidu Al Damamaka Habam in the Makor Shu Tahor, and the Chachamim testified that blood that passes through the uterus is going to be Tahor, meaning not uterine blood but outside blood that just passes through her uterus. Right. This is the classic discussion and debate of Makor Mekom Tame, Makor Mekom Tahor. Okay, fine. My Benayu. I'm sorry, the Gemara says it. Amra Ula, Makor Makamatami, Ika Benayu. Fine.
Rabbi Shulman, in the first two cases or three, would this possible from
Yibum? It's saying.
This is her situation.
I don't know. In other words, her first concern is not going to be Yibum. Her first concern is going to be simply, can I remain with my husband, even before he dies? Okay. Shvoferis Avgurim Evgarela. So the Gemara just is bothered by a simple question. Inserting a tube into her, isn't that going to be abrasive? Isn't it going to hurt her? So Amr Shmuel B'Shvoferis Shal Eiver Piyaratsuf L'Tocha. So Shmuel explains, Shmuel, our resident doctor. So he says, no, first of all, it's going to be made out of lead. And apparently that's a very smooth surface. And also, the tip of the tube is going to be basically turned in so that there's not going to be any scratching or abrasion against the woman.
It's going to be blocked.
Yeah, right. Amalei Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan. Okay. All right. That's the end of the Braisa. And just a couple of points that the Gemara covered to explain some of the last points of the Braisa. Now, Amalei Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish asks Rav Yochanan the following question. Now, Ben, this is not going to be exactly your question. I'll get to your question in just a moment. This is going to be similar, though. Now look. Okay, she didn't do a bedika by the first husband. And the Gemara doesn't really even explain why not. And she didn't do a bedika by the second husband. And the Gemara also doesn't explain why not. But at least now, by the time you get to the third husband, and you're now by the first act of relations, so haven't we figured it out? Meaning, right, we basically got it. She's going to bleed with the act of relations. It's now been proven 3 times with her first husband, 3 times with her second husband, and so now, why do we need 3 times with the third husband? Haven't we figured it out? So, Amalei Lefishein Kol Etzba Ushavos. So he says, well, not every etzba is the same. The Gemara, of course, is speaking euphemistically. Amalei V'tivdek Atzma B'bi Rishon HaShalba Shlishi Lefishein Kol Akolcho Shavos. So the Gemara says, not every etzba is the same, and not every koach is the same. So in other words, in order to come to a clear determination that it's the act of biyah, so you need three different men, and with each man you need three different acts of relations, because not every koach is going to be the same. Now, before I go on to the Gemara, so now let's try to attempt to address Ben's question, because it really is, it's the obvious question, and it's funny, the question didn't make it into the Gemara, and okay, it begs an explanation. So in other words, we're looking to save the woman. How come we weren't looking to save the first marriage? Right? Basically is what Ben wants to know. Meaning three times with the first husband, she's bleeding every time, and all we need to do is just basically figure out, well, where's the bleeding coming from? Is it coming from the uterus? Or is it coming from the canal, from the wall of the canal? And if once we ascertain that by doing the medical examination, as the Gemara itself explained, so now we know. So why don't we do that with the first husband in order to save herself from the first husband? So, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to give four possible suggestions in terms of why this is not suggested by the Gemara. So, so Rashi himself raises this. Let me find the Rashi for you inside. I'll quote the Rashi tomorrow. Can't find it right now. All right, fine. Anyway, explanation number one. So Rashi says that the examination that's being recommended by the Gemara is not 100%. Okay. I'll find it. And basically, Rashi says, "Oh, look, you can't do it after the first guy because the examination is not conclusive. There's another option for her." And it's not a pleasant option, admittedly. But in other words, she can marry another guy. But the second guy, there's another option for her. Again, it's not pleasant, but she'll marry a third guy. But after the third guy, there's no other option. So once you're backed into the corner where there's really no other option for this woman, and it's either do the examination, which is not really that conclusive, but do it, or she'll forever be forbidden, so then do the examination. Okay. That is Rashi's explanation. If you take a look at Tosos over here, Vitivdok, second Tosos on the Amud. So Tosos quotes Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam says, you know what, the truth of the matter is that we can do the examination even with our first husband. Here, Tosos, right in the middle of Tosos. Second word in the line, Rabbeinu Tam matel rishon bebedika. So Rabbeinu Tam says, do you want to do a bedika with the first guy? She can. So if she could do a bedika with the first guy, so why is she going off marrying a second guy, a third guy? And the Braisa that's telling her to move on is either talking about where she doesn't want to bother with the examination. I guess she doesn't like this husband so much. It's one possibility. Or the Braisa is talking about where no one's around who knows how to do the examination. Okay. That is Rabbeinu Tam, but Rabbeinu Tam basically says, yes, she could do the examination with the first guy. And then there's a third possibility, which is the Ran. And the Ran, the Chidush Ran here on the Gemara says like this. The examination is very risky. In fact, we know that because the Gemara itself raises that as an issue. Meaning the Gemara says, isn't she going to scratch herself? Meaning, can the examination hurt her? And basically the Gemara says, no, there's a way of preparing the tube so that it doesn't hurt herself. But you already see in the Gemara that the examination poses a risk. And not only does it pose a risk medically, it also poses a risk halachically. Because let's think about this. Meaning, what if she does it after the first husband, and she learned the blood does in fact come from the cervix? She's done. Right? Meaning, at this point in time now, it's concluded that she bleeds from the cervix. So, right. That's exactly what the Ran says. Once that's confirmed, so then the Chachamim won't let her get married again. Meaning, without any more information, and it's only a possibility that it comes from the cervix, so the Chachamim will say, okay, we're not sure where it comes from. You know what? Try a second guy. I know. It's more serious than that. I understand that. But, okay. But in other words, right, let's move on to another guy. And by the second guy, we can say that again. But once the examination is done, and once it's conclusively shown that the blood is in fact coming from the cervix, now it's possible that a second guy with a different anatomy may not cause the bleeding. But at this point in time now, the Chachamim won't even allow that possibility. Because now we know that with the first husband, it's not just bleeding, but it's uterus bleeding. And so therefore the Chachamim wouldn't allow it. So therefore the Ran explains that by doing an examination, really, you're now putting her in a position where she may not be able to marry a second or a third guy. So don't do an examination. Kind of let ourselves be somewhat ignorant. Do a second guy, do a third guy, and then, now that there's no other choice, then do the medical examination. Okay. There's a fourth possible explanation, but let's... okay. So there's Rashi, there's Rabbi Natan, there's Iran. So all the Rishonim basically address the issue of why she doesn't do a bedikah with her first husband. Okay, two stories, and we finish up for today. Okay. Hahida asela kama derebi amalei. I'm sorry. A woman came in front of Rebbe, and what was her issue in life? It was a very simple issue. She was bleeding every time she was having relations with her husband. Amalei laavdan. So he said to, I don't know who he is, but he says zilbata. Okay, hide. I'm injecting a little more visual into the Gemara over here. Hide behind the door as she walks through the door. So then, just scare the living daylights out of her. Okay, right. They say that helps for labor, inducing labor. Yeah, you want to support that? I think it's nonsense, but okay. Azol bata v'nafal mimenu chararas dam. And he did exactly what Rebbe instructed him to do. He scared her, and out comes a chararas dam. A piece of blood comes right out of her. I'm a Rebbe Nisrapas. And so Rebbe says, good, you're healed. Okay. Don't ask me to explain the medicine over here. I don't understand it, but that's fine. Nisrapas Zos. Hai is a sadas the coming to Mar Shmuel. I'm a lay. So the Gemara tells another story of someone coming in front of Shmuel. I'm a lay la Rav Dimi bar Yosef Zilbata. And Shmuel also offers the same medical advice. Go scare her. Frighten her. Now, not the same results. Unlike with Rebbe, where right, a little piece of blood fell out of her, nothing happened. She is mala v'nofetzes. I don't exactly know what that means, but basically, in other words, she unfortunately bleeds on account of having relations with her husband, and I have no medical solution for her, and unfortunately, she's done. Meaning, perhaps what Shmuel is saying is just with this husband, not with another husband. I'm not particularly sure, but okay. All right, we'll pause over here. Okay, we'll pick it up tomorrow from this point of the Gemara. Okay. Shabbos, we're gonna get together a little bit early on Shabbos. Minchas at 6. We're gonna get together at 4:30. So we're planning an hour and a half of learning on Shabbos. A, to catch up, and B, not only to catch up, but to also move a little bit ahead, so that we'll be good for Monday morning.